Welcome to this afternoon's session of the January 28th City Council meeting. Would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman?
Here.
Novick? Hales?
Here. Welcome, everyone. We're going to have a couple items on the calendar this afternoon. As always, we'll typically have testimony once we get done with presentations about these items in three-minute blocks for those of you who came here to speak. Because this body likes to hear all points of view, we ask if you agree with somebody that you give them a wave or a thumbs up, but that we don't have any vocal demonstrations in favor or against our fellow citizens as they have their say. So with that minor limitation and the other one, which is if you're a lobbyist for an organization, you need to disclose that when you speak. We'll get started with item number 121. Let the record show that Commissioner Novick here as well.
121, accept Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy from the Portland Housing Bureau.
Well, let me say a couple things and then hand this over to my colleague, Commissioner Saltzman. There's a lot of good work that has been put into what's going to get discussed this afternoon. There's also a lot of heartache from the past and from the present that we're trying to address. I just saw recently this copy of this map from 1950 of the distribution of African-American families in the close-in east side before Memorial Coliseum, before the freeway, before Emmanuel Hospital. And it's just, frankly, just shocking to look at that history. This is one way to see it, a lot of stories that make it more human than dots on a map. But when you see that graphic change from then to now, and you see the change that's around us right now, I think all of us are in this room because we want to manage change to a better result. And that's why we're here and why there's some volunteer activists that have put a lot of time into this issue, and we appreciate them, and why people on this council and in the bureaus that report to the five of us have put a lot of effort into housing issues as well. So with that, let me turn it over to Commissioner Saltzman, the commissioner in charge of the Housing Bureau.
Thank you, Mayor. Last year, Mayor Hales took a bold step to increase affordable housing and to address displacement in North and Northeast Portland by allocating an additional $20 million in funds for housing in the interstate urban renewal area. The Portland Housing Bureau was tasked with reaching out to the community to create a strategy for this additional investment. And this strategy that you'll hear today is the culmination of more than 7 months of work by the Housing Bureau and community partners. It's also an opportunity to improve the way we do business, to craft policy in partnership with the communities we serve, and to redress imbalances that continue to echo from our past. This strategy is about helping to keep people where they are, or in some cases, helping them come back to the neighborhoods where they grew up, where they worship, where they have community ties. It attempts to factor in the needs of an entire community, from the elders who want to age in place and one day pass down their family home, to young renters wanting to find housing that they can afford near family and community, to those wanting the security of buying their own home. Before we get to the details of the Housing Bureau's recommendations for how we will achieve that, we need to acknowledge two things. First, there's an important history, as the mayor was just saying, that brings us to this moment. It's a history that has resulted in gentrification and displacement. Second, it was the resolve of community members and leaders that made this possible, made this investment plan that you're going to hear possible. So we will begin today's presentation with Portland Housing Bureau Director Tracy Manning, and also Bishop Stephen Holt. And Bishop Holt will give a sort of a historical overview of displacement in North Northeast Portland, and Director Manning will cue up the recommendations. And then we have several invited guests after that, and then we can open it for public testimony.
Great.
So, Director Manning.
Thank you, Commissioner, Mayor, City Council. Since you allocated these funds last year, PHB has been engaged in a process with the community to ensure that we steward these funds so they have a real impact on the community that you asked us to serve. So we have a map up here. We'll have a few maps to go along with that the mayor. And this is our study area. It aligns with the URA boundaries in Interstate, but it also corresponds with areas of historic redlining and displacement. So as a starting point, we reached out in a number of ways, including four community forums that attracted 451 participants and a gathering of faith leaders serving the North and Northeast congregations. And to us, this outreach was really vital because we knew that we had to do things differently, and so we couldn't go to the community already having answers and plans. Building housing is frankly something that with our partners we're pretty good at, and we could have accomplished that without a lot of process. But to have a different impact, the strategy had to be more about the people, more about the community, and specifically about this community. And the community offered quite clear feedback on what kind of housing would have the most impact. They very generously came and shared personal stories of those of theirs and of friends and of family. They sent us written notes, and they spoke of the reality that they're living in the community every day. During our early planning stages, when we were reaching out to understand how to best get this information from the community, we were incredibly fortunate to meet Bishop Stephen Holt of International Fellowship Family and the 1145 Group, Faith Leaders Engaging in Social Justice Issues. And I will say that Bishop's willingness to engage, his leadership, his counsel to this process, and quite frankly to me, have been instrumental in our ability to connect with the community. He has lent his time, his name, and his credibility to shepherd this process because he needed to see that it was true to the people that we're trying to serve. In Bishop Holt's role in facilitating our community forums, he presented the historical context this work is based in and how displacement was more recently impacted the community of North and Northeast Portland. And so now I will turn to him to share that history again with us here today.
Thank you, Tracy. If you will look above or at the screen, it talks about something I call a backward glance and a forward look, meaning we took a moment to look back to take a view of our history, take a moment to look back to learn from our past, and then take a moment to look back so that we don't repeat our past. And Mayor, you already identified, if we can go to the next slide, some of the displacement events, the Vanport flood, I-5 freeway, the Coliseum, the Central Albina study, Emmanuel Hospital when it broke ground, and then the Interstate Urban Renewal Area. All of these events impacted thousands of families and thousands of households and caused a what we're calling gentrification or intentional displacement that left significant emotional and relational boundaries. The next portion of what we're going to talk about, or what I want you to see, the slides that we're going to show, are from 1970 to 2010. It is also the area of study, and each one is in a decade increment, so 1970 to 1980, 1980 to 1990. And what you have is it's color-coded to illustrate where the concentration of African Americans lived during this period. And so as you're seeing them switch, we have 1980. In 1990, you see the what I call the dark chocolate extending. And we see 2000, there's a switch, not as much. And then 2010, there's almost an absence of the dark chocolate, or where African Americans were concentrated. As you know, it's gone from 31% of people of color who lived in that portion of the city to less than 13%. It's been a significant impact. During that period of transition, there have been promises that have been made and weren't kept. And what we're trying to do is make sure that that doesn't happen again. I'm a native to the city. I've been here all my life. I don't see it from a distant position. I see it from direct impact. I also was one who lived in that area no longer. My family lived in that area no longer. Businesses that were there and no longer. There's something we have to do, and I'm excited about our opportunity to do something in regard to that. Brings us to this moment. And so we look back, but we don't look back to stay there. We look back to learn. We look back to change, and then to see what we can do as it relates to going forward. To that extent, then, we've got some community people here to talk about currently how the impact of gentrification and displacement is happening or what it's caused. So,
yeah, so I'd like to ask now Andrew Colas of Colas Construction, who is a long-term member of the Portland Housing Advisory Commission, where he's played a lead role in guiding the Housing Bureau's equity agenda. And we will also hear from Dr. Mark Strong, lead pastor of the Life Change Church in North Portland, and Katrina Holland, a community member who was a passionate advocate for this funding from the very beginning. Is Katrina here? Okay. Okay, Andrew, why don't you go first?
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, Mayor, Commissioners. I'm very happy to be here today. Just wanted to talk to the commission and the folks in the room today just a little bit about why I'm here and kind of what role I've played in this. I've been, as you said, on the Portland Housing Bureau Advisory Commission. So it's an advisory role. It's a committee. But we all, every single month, meet for 2 hours, and we talk about these problems that Bishop Holt spoke to you so eloquently about earlier. And I've been on that for 5 years, and I've constantly, you know, we've gone through a tumultuous time as far as our economic situations. We went from a time where there were $0, banks weren't lending to anybody, housing wasn't an option for anybody, to now where you see 23 tower cranes in the air. You see a bursting economy right now. And for me, I'm the president of the National Association of Minority Contractors. I want to make sure that while there's these huge development opportunities, that we're creating opportunities for our minority businesses. It's about economic development for me. So I'm happy that we've got to this point today. Is this the solution? No. But I think this creates a really good template and model. One of the biggest things that I'm excited about was the process that we went through. I think it was a very inclusive process. I commend Director Manning for her outreach, but she has some great people that work in that organization. Specifically, I'd like to mention Nate McCoy, Leslie Goodlaw, Carl Dinkinsfield. They were really involved in this process, and it was a very engaged process. There were 4 community meetings that were taking place, and we got some really good feedback from a lot of different members. So I feel good about hearing a lot of different voices because it's important that we hear, you know, various voices in the community. For me, I look at the fact that right now they've identified 120 homes that they want to make sure 40 homes to be built, and hopefully we can create those opportunities so that African Americans and Hispanic Americans and Native Americans, other community covers, have opportunities to live in those homes, and then making sure that we retain 80 homes. So that's not a huge number. It's 120 homes. But if you think about it, the average cost of a home in that area is about $250,000. So if you do the math on that, you're looking at it right around $30 million. Over the course of the next 20 years, I believe that the price of homes in that area will double with the amount of people that are moving in. The key to economic success in the United States is home ownership, and it's so important that we invest in this. 120 is not enough, but it's a start. It's a template. These aren't the only dollars that are going to be deployed from the Portland Housing Bureau, but these dollars we're going to look at, we're going to have community members that provide oversight, and I think we're going to create a template of how dollars in the future should be deployed. So I'm very excited about that opportunity. For me, in regards to NAMCO, making sure that we create opportunities for our businesses to grow. We have over 30 businesses that are members of this organization. I think we played a key role in kind of bringing together communities and putting together this petition to hopefully get to this point today. And for me, you know, looking at creating opportunities for businesses like Affordable Electric, Professional Minority Group, Raymore Construction, and just to name a few, City of Roses, there's a lot of great contractors out there, Primo Construction. So when we make sure that these dollars that are going to be deployed, $20 million, actually impact these businesses that employ diverse communities. Again, we're touching on economic development. That's how we make sure that people within our community have the opportunity to purchase these homes, have the opportunity to maintain in these neighborhoods. And it's so important that we focus on that as we deploy all funds, not only out of the Housing Bureau, but every bureau, making sure that we're really creating real opportunities for this these businesses. And, you know, I feel very strong about the group that's at the Housing Bureau, and I believe in them, and I know they're going to listen to the oversight. There's some great people that have been at the table, and they're going to continue to be at the table. But we need to push this forward and make sure that we do create these economic opportunities for all these businesses so that our communities can start being more prosperous in this city that we've been a part of for generations. So thank you very much for hearing me today, and I look forward to hopefully moving forward to some positive outcomes.
Thank you, Andrew. Dr. Strong?
All right. Well, good afternoon, everyone. Just appreciate the opportunity to just kind of share a little bit about some of our experiences. I've been a pastor in the Williams Corridor area for about close to 27 years, pastor in Life Change. And to say the least, there's been quite a bit of change that has happened in our neighborhood and our community. It's a whole another world than when we started. I think one of the impacts that some of the change has had on our congregation has been that, for one, you know, you can't get to church unless you have a place to park. People have not really had, some people have not really had an impact, had the ability to speak or have any influence in terms of what's been going on in the community. And it just kind of creates a lot of angst, emotion, and frustration. And so part of, you know, my responsibility as a pastor is to care and love for the people. But this whole gentrification piece has created a whole nother entire issue, because it's almost as it's like a loss, or someone is grieving because what was there prior is not there anymore. And, you know, grief, if you don't have a proper outlet to be able to find the support or even sometimes just to talk, it makes it difficult. That's why I appreciate the process that the Housing Bureau is going through that gives the community an opportunity to share some of the pain and the frustrations that the faith community has experienced. I think to kind of just sum up what some of that angst and some of that psychological pain that the community has experienced is just two conversations I had. One with a young woman that went to our church. She was probably, I'd say maybe 23 years old. And so I was having lunch with her, and she says, Pastor Mark, You don't understand. She said, when you guys were growing up in this area, you guys had places where you could go to, places where your friends could hang out that you called your own. We don't have that here anymore. There's no park that's our own. There's no place that we can just hang out and say is ours. And it's true that has been kind of obliterated with some of the changes that have taken place. And then the other conversation was with my own mother. My mom is 76 years old. My dad just turned 80 this year. He's still in good health. He still works every day, still sober-minded. And my mom just began to open up and pour her heart out. And she says, you know, she says, your dad is like a lost man. She said he comes home from work. He sits around. He's just lost. There's been so many changes that have taken place in the community that he has no place to have his to find his bearings or find his moorings because of all the changes that have taken place. And so I think it's important to realize those are just two conversations, but you can multiply that numerous of times in terms of what people are feeling in their hearts and what they're feeling in their souls concerning the change that have taken place. Now, much of what has happened. Not all of it's bad, but I think that a process like this where the city can come back and say that we are interested in trying to do something to make this situation a little bit better, I think goes a long ways, opposed to just saying that it's done, it's over with, and get on with your life. So I think even this is kind of a compassionate way to put a little ointment on a wound that's gaping in the faith community and the African American community as a whole.
Thank you, Dr. Strong. Katrina?
Yes. I also want to thank the Portland Housing Bureau and the city for devoting a lot of their time and effort in making this an inclusive process for how we can repair some of the issues we've faced in North and Northeast Portland. I'm here to kind of give a perspective of what I see happening with the opportunity that's presented before us, and also kind of give an outlook for, as a millennial, a young person who is looking to establish roots in Portland and grow and invest. And I would say there's a general sentiment among community members outside these walls, namely historically marginalized populations, and it's a sentiment of angst. It's a skepticism mixed with hope that this time things will be different. And as we sit here and stare at the frankly horrific history in Portland, ridden with racism, with shame, targeted displacement, we also sit, I feel, at a fork in the road that presents new paths that are untrodden to some really incredible opportunities. I could sit here today as an African-American young woman, as a soon-to-be graduate student, a mother, and I could tell you of the troubles I faced despite many hours toiling through education, through efforts of economic advancement in several career sectors, and the shameful struggle I've had in trying to find a decent house for my daughter and I that doesn't cost $4,850 just to move in. That's real. But I feel like you've heard these stories time and again, the stories of skyrocketing rents and move-in fees, ungodly wait lists, and overcrowded multifamily units, stories of unnecessary instability. But instead, I want to talk about the opportunity that I see, the opportunity we have in adding to our great reputation of micro-enterprise culture, world leadership in sustainable green living, international recognition for our innovative transportation policy and planning. This addition lies in executing true equity, and I don't say equity defined as the means to achieving the ends of diversity or equality, but equity defined as the infrastructural modifications necessary to end to achieve the ends of justice, of enhancing accessibility to opportunities for socioeconomic stability and advancement that Andrew was talking about, and to achieve ends of simply living. This opportunity is about fully realizing our potential in our city by investing in those who have been historically alienated. Folks who give major contribution to our city's well-being in so many ways and have for generations. So when deciding how to spend this money in this proposal in coming dollars, I do implore you, not for the sake of appealing to your heartstrings, but for the sake of realizing what's really before us, to keep in mind the following realities. One, I don't know if everybody remembers the process, but we are on a national stage with just this little bit of money due to its symbolism and how it came about. Two, we cannot wait for and rely on the private sector to raise wages enough to support some of the changes that have happened in North and Northeast Portland, and we cannot wait on the rental market to crash to make units affordable again. I mean, lack of demand may bring prices down, but again, the stakes in damage control in such conditions are way too high. Not only that, but people are paying these astronomically high rents, so there's really no reason to change them. And if these changes were to happen, I don't think none of these phenomena are going to happen anytime soon. However, the demand is now. We can't wait because people like myself, millennials attempting to build our socioeconomic foundations, are staring at unjust scales. I mean, we have to make decisions between healthcare, food, paying rent or the mortgage, building a family, career choices, caring for our loved ones as they age, student loans, and more. And I really think that's unfair, despite doing all that we were raised to do. Just go to school and have lofty career aspirations. So I support the plan that comes before you today. Like Andrew said, I don't think it's a complete fix, but I think it's a step in the right direction. So as you hear this proposal, I ask that you keep in mind this fork in the road that I've attempted to bring to the forefront of this discussion. We can continue business as usual, investing in things we've done previously, increasing our risk of stifling advancement towards true socioeconomic equity and justice, or we can stare our history in the face and say no more. And I think we have that opportunity. We can be example to the state and to the nation because of where we are with this process, and we can show them what equitable and impactful economic development looks like. So I challenge you to not look at this proposal as not just another series of line items in a budget, but as the catalyst to a driving force that is going to promote equitable advancement for all Portland citizens, especially the historically disadvantaged.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you. Very good.
Our last panel before we bring Tracy Manning back up to walk through the details are Reverend Dr. T. Allen Bethel, President of the Albina Ministerial Alliance, and Kat Guggenauer, who was with the Portland African American Leadership Forum, a group that was instrumental in bringing this proposal forward. Welcome, and Dr.
Welcome.
Bethel.
Good afternoon. Dr. T. Allen Bethel, Senior Pastor, Maranatha Church, Albina Ministerial Alliance President, member of PULF. I am a Portland resident. Thank you for the opportunity to address the council today and representing the approval of the neighborhood, North-Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy in the Interstate Corridor Urban Renewal Area Tax Increment Financing, as well as general fund dollars. While it remains true that the African-American black population in Portland and Multnomah County has been identified as one of the most vulnerable and most at risk for continued displacement or loss of stability in the Portland Housing Bureau study area, the gentrification factor, which has and still does impact the North-Northeast community, is still a concern. Mayor Hales and some PDC members and perhaps some Portland Housing Bureau members may remember October 2013 of a tour hosted by PULF to view those gentrification impacts on the Williams and Vancouver Avenue corridor and the conversation at Legacy Emmanuel Hospital about the community concerns and some specific requests of the mayor and the PDC. Subsequent to that date, due to the significant role that PULF played in hosting community forums and et cetera, which led to the announcement of the additional $20 million that we are discussing today. And in fact, we need multiple $20 million to adequately address these issues. Now, the proposed distribution plan contains items that are conducive to rebuilding the North-Northeast neighborhood community, and yet the amounts do not go far enough to address long-term housing stability. What other funds can be leveraged with this small amount of $20 million? Are there funds in the affordable housing set aside? What other funding streams are available from the city, from federal funds? How will these funds and others address and benefit long-term stabilization, home ownership, low-income affordable housing? Realizing that this $20 million is a budgetary shift of funds from PDC to PHB, and that there is no expected or forecasted any increase in the urban renewal area budget, are there other funds that should be included in this discussion and the North-Northeast Neighborhood Housing Strategy? I ask further that as these funds and others are distributed, invested, used for land banking, that the opportunity for housing, construction, planning, design, and development opportunities, but not limited to those, be made available openly, fairly, equitably, to guard against any single source individual firms. That we further work towards a comprehensive plan that includes self-determination where the people of the community have a stronger vested say in how their community is developing. This comprehensive plan, or a people's plan, will help address the long-term solutions for the $20 million over the next 5 years that will yield a response when these systemic issues that have affected North-Northeast neighborhood rise again, and I believe that some of them will, that the response will be we, speaking on behalf of the city, we did give, but it does not go far enough. While the issues still remain for the housing issues in North-Northeast, we remain unabated to the remediation and the elimination of these issues. The critical work of moving these policies to practice is our utmost priority to ensure that the mistakes and short-sightedness of the past are not repeated and to directly address current realities for Portland's African-American and black population. This is a marathon. It's not a sprint. We join you on the marathon to design with the people's input and rebuild our North-Northeast neighborhood. And I remind you, what's going to be different about this? We want to hold you accountable, as you said. It's going to be the way we go about doing it. Let's go about doing it the right way so that we can eliminate these issues, not repeat what was in the past, and see a fruitful North-Northeast community rebuilt, reliving that's not a correct word, but you got my point, that we can go together hand in hand and achieve a great community in the Portland area. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Beth.
Thank you very much.
Ms. Guggenhauer.
Good afternoon, Council. Thanks for providing Paul the opportunity to weigh in on the North-Northeast housing strategy discussion. I'm Kat Guggenhauer, and I'm a graduate from the Portland African American Leadership Forum. I'm also a community health worker and an equity consultant, and today I serve as an advocate for the Portland African American Leadership Forum for our people and as a steward of the process to stabilize and heal Portland's Black African American community. First, I did want to echo Dr. Bethel's points and the points made by all the other panelists about the impact of displacement and gentrification on our community and lift up the urgency of the issue we face. I also really want to commend the responsiveness of the city to PALF's advocacy in 2014, which lifted the needs of our community to the national level. It facilitated the beginning of a difficult and long overdue conversation about the root causes and upstream solutions available to overcome Oregon's racially exclusionary past. Through this good faith effort, we see the promise of a long-term city-community partnership to continue allocating resources based on need. The impact, the individual and community impact of multi-generational disinvestment and displacement for any people is trauma. Dr. Strong spoke to this. It's a pain, suffering, loss of community ties, loss of place, and loss of belonging. In 1993, we had created the Albina Community Plan in conjunction with the city, and it was a proactive, comprehensive, community-led, anti-displacement, anti-gentrification planning document which promised to stem the impact of hyperinvestment in the interstate corridor urban renewal area. And the purpose was to bring the benefit to the residents, not just redevelop sticks and bricks, an area that was segregated, redlined, disinvested in, and whose people's equity was stripped through the housing crisis. However, over the past 15 years, our people have not been able to take advantage of the renewed investment. Therefore, we think a health wealth strategy is needed. So by investing in the most vulnerable and excluded, we can achieve multiple returns on investment, including both regional economic prosperity and well-being. As Katrina outlined, the returns on investment are exponential. Therefore, we need to aggressively tackle the root causes, which concentrates poverty and which at this point is moving our community members out to underdeveloped parts of the city and concentrating poverty again. To this end, we believe a right to return policy to areas of high opportunity makes a lot of sense. We believe the $20 million allocated by the city marks a sea change in budget and policy practices and bodes well for future policy intervention system disparate impact and different treatment that our community has faced and continues to face. At this point, we do need, as Dr. Bethel said, explicit assurance and commitment that this $20 million will be the seed that catalyzes strategic systemic change to close the gap between those who are thriving and those in need, and it's not just a one-off. We need to leverage this investment many times over to address the long-term housing stability, homeownership, community development, and placemaking for our community members. PALF's advocacy made plain the push-pull factors and showed market forces were one of the main determinants of where our people are living. Therefore, housing choice was not the thing that moved our people around the city, desegregating this area. The affordable housing dollars that are made available through the city's 30% set aside from tax increment financing, we'd like to know what amount has been captured to date. It was always meant to be a floor and never a ceiling. So we're curious as to what other anti-displacement resources are truly available in this strategic stabilization policy. And as Dr. Bestel mentioned, PALF has just been given funding to go forward with our People's Plan, which will be another community-led community development plan. It's a whole system, comprehensive approach to addressing and redressing the critical social, environmental, and health issues facing our community. We do think it's important to say that there are differences of opinion within our community. We are not a monolith. However, we all agree that $20 million isn't enough. We all agree that promises have been broken. We all agree more can and must be done, and we want to work in collaboration with the city to create a holistic community development strategy and action plan. I'm not sure how much time I have. I'm probably at the end.
Can I ask a question of Dr. Bethel?
Sure.
Quickly. Dr. Bethel, you said a lot of things that struck me, but one was you raised a cautionary flag about how the monies are distributed.
Yes.
And so that goes to this whole question of transparency and the integrity of the process. You know, sir, that the Housing Bureau uses a notice of funds available process where they advertise their dollars and they solicit proposals and they rank them and they use a value system to rank them. And under Director Manning's leadership, equity has been raised to a more prominent place. That's created some conflict with some of our partners. But what specifically in that system do you want us to pay particular attention to, sir?
Thank you for the question. I would you would pay careful attention to the ranking, the questions asked, and the persons who do the ranking. I'm familiar with, in several organizations, not only for the city, for TriMed, and for other groups, that when you do the ranking, based on who's sitting there and relationships with a particular firm or individual that you've had history with, say for 5, 10, 15 years, there is sometimes an inherent bias when you sit down that I know this company can do, and so sometimes they're ranked a little higher and the other companies are ranked a little lower. I think we need to have a comprehensive look at that to try to guarantee that we don't end up with the same company or companies always getting the contracts and then talking about we're going to subcontract something out and we get some subcontracting very little to low-end jobs or we get subcontracting to a front. Those are issues that we know are there. We've just got to work to eliminate them, and especially in North Northeast Portland in its redevelopment.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you both.
Thank you.
Now I'd like to ask Tracy Manning to come back up, and she'll actually walk us through a PowerPoint, the details of the plan. And Leslie Goodlow.
Leslie, yes.
Had a big role.
Anything that goes well is her doing. So thank you very much. Really appreciate the commentary of our guests. Registered very true, I'm sure, to our own experiences, certainly to what we heard in the forums. And hopefully these recommendations respond to what we heard from the people who are living these experiences every day. So as part of those community forums, we asked people to fill out comment cards. 300 people agreed to. Nearly half of the African-American homeowners said they were at risk of displacement, and a common reason they listed was an inability to afford costly home repairs. So the first strategy that we are recommending is to spend $4 million on keeping people who are still in the community from losing their homes through the provision of home repair loans and grants, an already successful strategy. Another common theme, one you've heard today, was the need to help people become homeowners. The studies have shown that one key driver in the wealth gap between African Americans and whites is the years of family home ownership. So we're recommending allocating $5 million over two different strategies to increase home ownership opportunities in the area. First is to assist first-time home buyers. $2.4 million would allow us to move an additional 40 households into home ownership, and an additional $2.6 million to develop new affordable housing homeowner stock in the area. We're also recommending the creation of rental homes. We found through comments at the forum, 83% of all of the renters who attended those forums responded saying they were at risk of displacement, and half of those were people of color. So we are recommending that we invest $4.5 million plus land that PHB owns currently on the east side of Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, just south of Fremont. This is something, as all of these strategies are, that we can put in place immediately to increase the supply and availability of affordable rental units. This investment would allow us to build 40 to 80 new units, depending on size. And one of the other things we heard very strongly at the forums was the need for family-sized units that were worked with family amenities. Another thing we heard a lot at the forums was about mixed-use developments, that there should be space in the ground floor of this building to support neighborhood businesses, something that Bishop Holt, as well as a number of the panelists, talked about, those economic opportunities accruing back into this community. And so partnering with PDC and a number of the folks that we met through this process, we think we can identify local businesses to be part of that development. Next up, after that project, we've identified an additional $3.5 million to assist a second development. PHB owns a second piece of land at Rosa Parks and Martin Luther King. TriMet owns a piece of land. Multnomah County owns a piece of land that they have expressed real interest, and they attended all of the forums with us to hear from people what they might want them to do with their land. We've also been approached by three different nonprofit organizations that own land in the district, so we know there's a lot of potential there. And finally, we received really strong support from the community for a strategy of land acquisition. And so we have recommended $3 million of the money be used to acquire land. I was very compelled by the thoughtfulness that this they came up with this strategy. It's very important to us to get this money on the ground quickly. And when I say us, Commissioner Saltzman and Mayor Hales have felt very strongly that we need to move quickly, and I appreciate that prompting. But we also know that 5 years is really a short period of time, and acquiring land that can be used in the community is a way to have a longer-term play and a longer-term strategy, and frankly have faith in the people who have been part of this process and have said they want to step up and figure out how to get that land developed.
Is this in addition to the previous list that you just gave of the PDC?
It is.
Yeah.
Yes.
And is it multifamily properties?
To be determined. Land that would be for affordable housing development guided by the community.
Maybe mixed use.
Mixed use, certainly, always when it's on the main arterial streets, which, of course, most of the urban renewal area is. Yes.
No. And that would mean PDC putting additional resources in to make sure that the commercial side of it worked. So,
yeah, that would be fabulous. Yes, they've worked with us closely on that. So I think something you also heard from the panelists and something that we heard and challenged ourselves with all the time is, how is this really going to be any different? The communities offered feedback in plans before, and previous public processes were developed with outcomes that are yet to be fulfilled. And so we knew we had to answer that question. And much of what you've just heard is, in fact, not that different. These recommended investments expand a number of our existing effective programs and to fund affordable housing development. So the strategy also includes several new practices and policies that will impact how we do our work, shaped by the stories people have shared. So during the forums, a lot of what we've heard also had to do with access to housing, again, part of the testimony you've just heard, as well as the economic forces that have shaped this community. So there's a number of practices outlined in the full report, which I will not go into all of them, but I do want to highlight a few. Fortunately, very early on in the process, Commissioner Saltzman expressed an interest in whether we could create a priority in the housing we'd create for people who have been displaced or at risk of displacement from this community. And so since we had that extra time to work on it, we've been working with the city attorney's office. We were able to reference similar policies that have been successfully implemented around the country in New York, Massachusetts, California. So we now know that it is legally possible to create a preference based on a geography. So people who have previously or currently live in that geography. So we will work with community members as well as the attorney's office so we can craft the mechanics of the policy that will really truly impact the people that we're trying to serve while meeting legal criteria. Economic opportunity, you've heard a lot about that. We certainly have as well. Maxine Fitzpatrick has been reminding me for years and years that economic housing development is economic development. Andrew Cullis speaks very eloquently and persuasively over the years about how vital it is that the economic benefits that will accrue to this work stay in the community. So as part of our strategy, we will continue to partner with PDC to identify those community-based businesses that can be commercial tenants in the ground floor of these developments and others to come. We'll increase our MWESB, minority women-owned and emerging small business subcontracting goals, expand them to include professional services and focus on our minority contracting. And we'll work with PDC and community-based organizations to assist some long-term property owners who are interested in developing their land or offering housing. It was something that we actually heard quite a bit during the forums from people who said, I have land, I'd like to help, I don't really know how, I don't trust. It's frankly not something that we as a big government bureau are great at. We work on bigger scale things. So we're gonna take a little time and work with some folks in the community who can be good at it to help us figure out how to help these smaller property owners do what they want to do with their land for the benefit of their community. So next steps. PHB is also including two decision packages in the budget that I understand is due on Monday that are responsive to the needs that you've heard about today. So one would extend these successful programs that keep homeowners in their homes to the balance of the urban renewal area, or to the balance of the study area. Right now, of course, TIF can only be spent within the URA. Our study area is larger, and keeping people who are still there in their homes is a huge priority. A second decision package would extend the strategy of land banking to combat displacement and gentrifying neighborhoods citywide, including in North and Northeast Portland. And again, we've heard very persuasive arguments about land banking. TIF is a somewhat imperfect tool for that. General fund, we have already talked to, and you'll see when you get our budget, banks and foundations that are willing to match a general fund commitment for land banking in areas experiencing gentrification at least one-to-one. We were often asked in a variety of forums about where the citywide place is, where strategies are being discussed to, on a citywide basis, mitigate involuntary displacement. The Portland plan actually does a really good job of outlining the need and the some of the next steps for some of these strategies. So we're asking you to ask Portland Housing Bureau, the Office of Equity and Human Rights, and the Bureau of Planning and Sustainability to convene our sister bureaus and work on strategies to recommend to you that would be citywide strategies to mitigate displacement. I know a lot of your bureaus are already working on things like an equity lens for capital investment, and so really just bringing those efforts together. And finally, no matter how good these recommendations are, their impact will depend on how they're implemented. So we've been working with Commissioner Saltzman and the mayor, and you've heard about this oversight committee, this issue of accountability back to the community. We are well aware that this is just a plan at this point. No matter how well-intentioned and how we implement it makes all the difference in the world. And the people that, frankly, we feel like we owe most explanation to are out in the community. And so Bishop Holt has agreed to help us organize this committee. We will report to them annually, as will anybody funded under this initiative. And then they will report, or we'll report to them more than annually, they will report to you annually about how we're all doing and what they've seen. And so with that transition, I will turn it back to Bishop Holt.
I will wrap it up by saying thanks to all of the presenters. Extremely clear in the articulation. I think we all are very clear on the need. It's now how do we handle it on the back end. And our goal, our commitment, our desire is to see that what has happened historically is not repeated. This isn't much, but it is a significant step. So thank you. Thank you for beginning the process. And with the opportunity to leverage relationships, other resources and networks, I think something significant can happen. The goal of putting the group together will be to pull some of the best minds and thinkers, some of which you've heard, voices I'll be talking to about being a part of this group, part of this council, to do our part to help this relationship come to pass. We want to see something great happen. So thank you. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you both. Questions? Yeah.
Tracy, can I ask you two questions?
You can ask as many as you'd like.
Andrew Colas talked about a benefit of home ownership, which is wealth creation. And yet, one of the concerns we have that's been identified is being people priced out of their homes, an affordability problem. So there are some models that we use, like land trusts and other things, which maintain permanent affordability in home ownership, but work against a little bit this idea of wealth creation, because you're limited in how much you can make in order to maintain an affordable unit. I know this is a big question, but how do you reconcile those two in Inner Northeast? The desire to have homes that are affordable and accessible, and also the desire for someone to achieve the American dream of a home and potentially growing wealth through that home.
Yeah. Well, fortunately, we don't have to just rely on what comes out of our own brains. We've got many really able partners who understand that both of those can be co-equal goals. They're obviously, you can't have everything. So it's about striking that balance. So, you know, for instance, I think the land trust folks would tell you that in their model, and because of the funds they can leverage, as can the other folks who do home ownership in the community, that while some of that equity stays in the home to keep it affordable for the next family, because the family's paying less during the course of their home ownership, they have the ability to accumulate wealth not only through the appreciation of the home, the structure, but also through lower payments on an ongoing basis. They're not paying mortgage insurance. The mortgage payment is less. There's other models out there, but there certainly isn't a perfect solution. But, you know, it's our job to set the outcome out there and certified smart people behind me to tell us how they can meet it.
Well, and it's also, I think, the community's role to figure out the mix of that, because they are different. They're different values. The second question I want to ask you has to do with the right of return. The Federal Fair Housing Act, which for people that follow that law closely, is now the Supreme Court has taken a case and is poised apparently to gut it and to say that disparate impact cases would no longer be actionable, which would be just in the pantheon of civil rights decisions, one of the all-time worst. But there's some rumors to that effect. The fair housing laws say that you have to take race out of the equation when you're deciding to rent to someone. So in an instance like this, where disproportionately race is at the heart of a displacement story, how does a right of return work where race can't be explicitly a part of the criteria for exercising that right?
Right. So we've spent, thanks to the city attorney's office, and I think Linda Law has been working with us on this. She may be here as well. So what we've learned, you're right, we cannot call out any protected class, but we can call out a geography. This is a geography that has historically been the heart of our African-American community, and so folks who lived in that geography are not exclusively African-American, but certainly have historically been in large numbers. But it's about the geography, and that's why we can't, and there's certainly nuances in how it gets rolled out that we have to be careful with and thoughtful about. If it's about the geography that and not a protected class, and at least for the moment, doesn't disparately impact a protected class, which this would not, as long as the geography is this geography, then we're okay.
And do you have a sense of in terms of the new units that you hope to bring online through these investments? Put aside the leveraging. We've heard folks say, let's leverage and do more. But for these investments, do you have a sense of the number of units that would be eligible for this right of return?
I don't know if there's a proportionality to the preference. We would say that all of the developments that are funded under this proposal will be subject to a preference policy.
All the new construction.
Right, and whether it can be every single unit, that's a nuance I think we still have to figure out.
Okay. Thank you.
I'd like to follow up on those questions. So let's hope that this strategy is successful, that we are able to use geography to help folks stay in the neighborhood and bring folks back who are displaced, and to help folks fix up their homes so that they don't get foreclosed upon or whatever. What's to stop the same thing happening again in 10 years when people come along and offer way more for the home in fair market? And maybe people would want to pay for their college career or something. You know, it is, as following up on Commissioner Fisher's line of questioning, home ownership is the key to wealth. And if it becomes so expensive, and which it already has in some ways, to live in North and Northeast Portland, people may choose to sell out, move to a less expensive area of town. They're still homeowners, so that they're helping, but then we're still potentially adding to the gentrification of Northeast Portland.
Right. So I think there's a couple different ways to answer that. I mean, I think an important key that I hear in your question is one of choice. And when we talk about this, we talk a lot about involuntary displacement, which could be about a variety of different things, predatory lending. We heard a lot about reverse mortgages that people took, not having access just to the basic information about whether or not that was a good choice for them. If somebody chooses to sell their home and use that equity in their life the way they see fit, that's great, wonderful for them.
But they're not then going to be choosing the person they sell to based on geography.
Yeah, if it's their personal residence, that is true.
So that's something that I'm concerned about. I'm also wondering about the home repair loans or grants that then the home is in good shape. Again, somebody else swoops in and says, that looks like a lovely home. And they're not necessarily going to fit with the folks that we're particularly trying to help.
Yeah.
Was the discussion of that?
So the loans have a 15-year term. So if somebody, it's not a program designed to help somebody flip their home. So if they start a proportional repayment on year 11, and then it's forgiven in year 15. If they sell before then they owe the money back so that we can recycle it into the next home.
Okay.
Can we permanently stem displacement and people wanting to leave? That may be more ambitious than I can commit to.
Is there something like that with the home purchasing assistance also?
Yeah, and I think that's the question that Commissioner Fish was referring to. There's a bunch of different mechanisms in home ownership that help retain permanent affordability or recycle the money.
Or
and there's different mechanisms depending.
Continue to help folks at the targeted demographics to be the ones who buy the home.
Right.
Yeah. And how are you going to get the word out to people who've already been displaced that they're able to come back?
Yeah, so that's a great question. It's actually a question that we specifically asked people in the forums, and I don't know if, Bishop, you want to refer to that. I think that may have been one of the questions in your group that you facilitated. Certainly, I would say that what we have learned overwhelmingly in this process is it's about who we work with and what their connections in the community are, and not what we think is the right way to communicate with people.
One of the things we're trying to do is make sure that the information that's being talked about is being disseminated through community groups, churches, organizations where people are meeting those who've been displaced, impacted, where they're getting the current information and opportunity to access. It's one of the goals, is to make sure that the information is getting to the people who can benefit from it and who should be benefiting from it.
Right.
So, yeah.
I would also just want to give another shout out to PALF. They put a tremendous amount of energy in their community conversations in trying to locate and reach out to people that had been displaced. And as we were, we actually, when we did the forums, mailed 72,000 postcards, and some of those covered all of the zip codes in the study area, but they also covered zip codes that census data and other information that we got where we think people had predominantly been moving to. I'm sure we didn't capture them all, but there's some geeky data ways to help out with that as well.
Okay, and then my final question relates to Dr. Bethel's testimony and that of PALF in terms of needing to leverage more money. The program that I know of thinking of that leverages the most money is the East Portland Action Plan, We're for $279,000 a year. There's a huge investment by the community of organizing their own committees, of working on different action areas, $100,000 in grants that they decide who gets the grants and they do the projects and such. Was there any discussion of having a North-Northeast Portland action plan that could the great work that you've done in involving the community and is there a way to empower community members who've come in rather than having these be completely government programs where it's the majority of the administrative work is done by either Home Forward or the Housing Bureau? Is there a way, or was there any discussion of more community empowerment?
Yeah, lots, and I would take any.